TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, you're looking quite two-dimensional today, but still great hair as always.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I was just so excited to be sitting on this, you know, historical saddle. You know, it just felt so good here on Saddle Up. And yeah, I had to make sure the hair was just right so that, you know, I could get my picture on this historical saddle. And wow, I got to get me one of these. This is so comfortable. Everybody's going to be sitting on saddles in the future.
Absolutely. Right. I guess there's a saddle in the ready room because of Pike's love of horses. But when we decided to call this podcast Saddle Up based on the very limited information we had in those teasers that we got before the show started, it's really worked out quite well. We've had other saddle references on the show this season, and now we get an actual saddle. And of course, perhaps the best part is Boimler saying Riker when he swings his leg over it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, as Pike would say, hold on to your saddles.
All right, everyone. As you can tell, it's time to talk about the seventh episode of season two of Strange New Worlds, Those Old Scientists. Here is a very quick rundown of this very unusual episode. When the USS Cerritos visits Kralmuth B to investigate Bradward Boimler's all-time favorite portal, to make sure the portal area is free of any portal problems, the ensign gets sucked into the portal, which is a problem. On the other side, he finds himself at the feet of Una Chen Riley, La'an Noonien Singh, and Mr. Spock. Stardate, the past. Captain Pike, aka Funny Captain, must find a way to return Boimler to his animated future before he can change history, a task that becomes more complicated when Beckett Mariner comes flying through the portal just as Boimler is saying goodbye. With the last bit of known Haronium gone, can the crew of the Enterprise find a way to get the two reference-dropping misfits back home? It's down to a coin toss. Do you feel lucky? Spoiler, they do. And then they get animated themselves. So, Matthew, we knew this was coming up since before the season started. We knew they were going to be doing a crossover animation and live action. I had been wondering, how are they going to pull this off? What is this going to be like? And I was skeptical and also curious. And we're about to find out how you feel, but my very quick summary up front is that I thought it was handled very well if you're going to blend these two things together, and it was quite fun. And what did you think about it?
You know, I think it's one of those things where this goes as well as it possibly can when you think about the idea of merging Lower Decks with Strange New Worlds, when you're taking animation with live action. And, you know, of course, they're not doing a Who Framed Roger Rabbit kind of thing here, you know. So I think all of that is really fun. You know, the episode this seems to be trying to mimic the most to me is Trials and Tribulations in many ways when it comes to like the humor involved, mixing the two crews together, you know, trying not to change the past, all of those type of things are things to which I think this episode is really trying to mirror. And yeah, I mean, all in all, this is probably as successful as you could possibly get when trying to put these two shows together. And so, I mean, I'm happy with it, you know, like not to spoil it up front, but I mean, like, if you're going to do this, I think it's probably done as well as you can. Mm-hmm. And it turns out to be one of those episodes, which it's fun. and you can kind of just, you know, plop on the couch and turn this episode on at any time and watch, you know, which is one of the best things about, you know, different episodes of Star Trek, when you feel like you can just watch it without having to have seen anything before, really, or anything after. This is one of those type of episodes. And so, yeah, I mean, again, I can't imagine it really coming together better than this, just because, you know, it is a really outrageous idea to try and do in the first place.
Well, those sound like final thoughts. So what's your rating for this one? And then everyone, we'd love... No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I mean, that was my feeling, is that if you're going to do this, you have to handle it deftly, and you really need to have synergy between the characters and the actors that are coming from the two series. And I think that that all came together really well here. And they also gave us a story that, it's not a heavy story, but it is a story where they're dealing with an issue with grain and helping people that would have been at home in the original series in The Next Generation. It's that kind of story. And it also has that element of how events influence the past. So they were able to tie in to La'an's recent experience and just touch on it without making it a central point of the episode or anything. And they were also able to give us, with Tendi, that kind of story that's somewhat similar to T'Pol's story with her ancestors coming to Earth. And then you've also got a little bit of that. It reminded me of Chekhov a little bit about, you know, this was invented by Russians. This was invented by Russians. And Tendi's like, you know, this was discovered by Orions. And so I love all those little touches. But we've talked a lot on this show this season, and a couple of weeks ago, especially, we talked about the use of humor on Strange New Worlds and how sometimes it doesn't land for us. But what I will say is that one reason this episode, I think, works quite well is that this cast, this crew, and the way they portray the characters, Pike and Number One, Spock, Ortegas, Chapel, everybody, really, they are able to deliver funny lines or light subjects in a way that feels natural for their characters. It doesn't feel forced. And when you bring in Mariner and Boimler, if you had a crew, if you think about The Next Generation crew, for example, if they had landed on the Enterprise D, it's hard for me to see those characters, Picard, Riker, and such, blending as easily with Mariner and Boimler as this crew does. And I think one reason that we can watch this and accept what is happening and it feel natural for the characters is because they have put these characters in humorous situations throughout the run of the series up to this point, enough that when we see them do it, especially with Pike, for example, or Number One, it doesn't feel unusual. And then the thing that does feel unusual in this episode, which we can talk about a bit, is Spock with the laughing and the smiling. But it's presented here, first of all, there is a reason why he's doing this, which has been established prior to this episode. But even more so, I think in this episode, they can do those laughs and those sort of creepy smiles, and it works because it's a comedy episode with Lower Decks coming into it. So they set this up enough leading up to this that it felt natural to have this crew in a Lower Deck setting.
No, I definitely think that you hit it on the head. Now, I will say one of the slight detractors for the episode for me is that it does make the crew of the Enterprise feel a little bit silly. In the way in which they're kind of reacting to some of these things, like very almost childish, like, again, I come back to the idea of like CW type of behavior, you know, where Pike's kind of reacting to have, you know, being called, you know, all these wonderful, glorious names and mentioning how great his hair is. And it's like, he comes off as just slightly less real as a character. He just, I think the thing about it is that the episode basically is a Lower Decks episode.
Well, that's
a Strange New Worlds episode.
Exactly.
And so they fit within the feeling of the Lower Decks instead of Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, exactly.
And which, again, when you're merging these two, it's not like a terrible thing that that's the case.
Yeah.
But I mean, when I take it as the overall and the way this fits into Strange New Worlds, I do feel like, and again, it's not a huge thing, but it does kind of make the crew of the Enterprise feel utterly ridiculous and lack the kind of gravitas that you would want from a crew of this caliber.
Sure.
So, but again, that's the difficulty of trying to do this in the first place, because you're really trying to, I mean, even though Strange New Worlds has had and done a lot more humor, you're still mixing it with a show that is literally just all humor, you know, with a few poignant moments here and there. And so that's a tough, it's definitely a very tough thing to do. And so I do feel like as well as I think they do at meshing these two things together, it's not as though there aren't some little like hiccups along the way.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I kind of take this one, pull it out of the rest of the series a little bit and accept that they are exaggerating those reactions of the crew a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it could be.
Yeah, well, that's how I read it because, like you said, this is essentially a Lower Decks episode. And I thought it was quite impressive how the Strange New Worlds cast put themselves into that Lower Decks mode so easily and really felt like that they blended well with the Lower Decks style, a bit more subdued. They're not as frantic, obviously, as Lower Decks. And Boimler was...
But they're close in this episode.
They do get
close. They're pretty close.
Yeah, they do, which I think is very interesting because normally these characters are not like that. And to see the actors actually move in that direction enough to blend in with the Lower Decks feel, knowing that they're going to come back away from that in future stories... and have been in the past, I thought was really quite interesting.
Right.
I mean, I love the moment when they're sitting around the conference table and Una says, has anyone noticed that their references are weirdly specific? And I thought that was such wonderful commentary on Lower Decks itself, because it's just from a typical episode of Lower Decks from start to finish is just a barrage of specific references to the past, to past Star Trek. Although you and I have never, I think, really talked about Lower Decks on mic together much, but I think we have talked off mic about how they are able to actually tell stories in those episodes. It's not just joke, right? They actually do tell legitimate Star Trek style stories, which is quite impressive. In this episode, Boimler is a lot more restrained, actually. Like, Boimler, up until the point when Mariner comes through the portal, Boimler, of course, he's bumbling around like he is, and he's in his hero worship mode like he often is, and he keeps accidentally telling people about the future, even though he promises not to. Worf's honor. Oh,
Worf's honor. Yeah.
Telling people Pike's birthday's a holiday in the future. It's kind of like Geordi telling Cochrane that there's a statue. There's going to be a statue of you right over there, right? And I don't want to forget this because it's a reference to one of my absolute favorite Star Trek episodes and Next Generation episodes. When Boimler, at the beginning, when he's being pulled into the portal and he's horizontal and he's being sucked in and he yells, "Remember me!"
Yeah.
I thought that was such a nice, subtle, and maybe a reference that a lot of fans will miss, because I think the episode Remember Me with Beverly is, it's not one of the ones everyone talks about all the time. But I love that that reference was there. But anyway, when Mariner comes through the portal, from that point on, you know, then it really is like Lower Decks, where she's just dropping the references constantly, which leads to Una's comment, which I said before. But I also liked the idea that for Mariner, she's just really there to meet Uhura.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that, you know, Boimler is, you know, the one who, like you said, is more restrained and mm-hmm. feels more like he would actually and could belong in this era mm-hmm. than, of course, Mariner, who's just like a million miles a minute. I'm so glad you didn't get dropped in the dystopian San Francisco during the Bell Riots, you know, right. Cisco. You know, it's just like, yeah, I mean, and she, I think it's interesting because in the episode, she never really finds a way to not just be mm-hmm. what she always is, whereas yeah. Boimler completely is able to realize, mm-hmm. okay, the situation he's in, the seriousness of the, mm-hmm. The situation, and really kind of curtail some of his, you know, more exuberant nature, which yeah. I thought was a really nice development for that character mm-hmm. specifically, to be able to see that, because, you know, I think as we move into the fourth season of Lower Decks, it would honestly be nice to see these characters kind of advance a little bit. And mm-hmm. maybe that's a nod to the fact that that's actually going to be happening mm-hmm. with Boimler as we move into season four.
Yeah. But I think this works well for the two characters together, because if they both were there and they both felt like they might fit in, I don't think the episode would be as interesting. I think that you need this balance of Mariner just Mariner yeah. and just never stopping with the talking and the references and the kind of irreverent attitude that she has.
Right.
And I also think it makes sense for Boimler, because Boimler does aspire to rise up in the ranks. Like he...
Sure. Oh, yeah.
That's where his hero worship comes from, and he really wants to be an officer like Pike.
Right.
He just can't, you know, it's not his personality to get there, I think, but he wants to be that. So I think the way Boimler acts in this episode is very appropriate for him, and then the two characters together, to me, felt pretty close to how they would be on Lower mm. Decks, where, of yeah. course, Boimler's dropping the references as well, but does have a bit more of a grounded and serious side to him compared with Mariner.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think it works for the episode, and it, you know, it feels like we're watching a Lower Decks episode that just happens to be set on mm-hmm. the Enterprise with this series, you yeah. know, and I would say, you know, for me, we've talked so much about canon this year, and this is one more nail in the coffin of putting this in a different, you know, area of canon than yeah. the Prime universe, because I just can't accept Lower Decks as being part of Prime canon. Uh-huh. And I don't think it was ever really meant to be a part of Prime canon. I always felt like it was meant to be a wonderful homage and, yeah. you know, a joyful expression of what we loved about Star Trek without actually having to be canon. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, by putting these two together, to me, it just further shoves Strange New Worlds into that category, which mm-hmm. I'm fine with. Yeah. It was one of those things where I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, but the whole idea that these two are existing in the same universe that we would get the Kirk that we know, the Picard we know,
yeah.
and all that just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I don't know. Like, if you think about any office, any company, any office, kind of anything in life, you've got the people who are great achievers and rise to the top and keep everything running. But you've also got plenty of people who kind of bumble around the office, aren't very good at their jobs, mess things up accidentally, spend a lot of time looking for downtime. So, for me, I can imagine that in Starfleet, there are plenty of people like the characters on Lower Decks in a ship like that as well.
Well, and I mean, I get what you're saying. We've had episodes about characters on Lower Decks of ships, right? So,
but they've usually been, for the most part, except for Chell, who can't keep up with Tuvok running around the ship.
Yes.
But like, the TNG episode Lower Decks, you know, those are serious officers who are just in the early stages of their career. Yes. They're not the kind of characters on Lower Decks.
I mean, I see what you're saying. And I just am like, that's too far. It would be like, you know, the characters on Lower Decks are basically the same type of characters you get in a movie like Office Space.
Yeah. Sure.
But, you know, Office Space in the movie, say, Shattered Glass, don't take place in the same universe. You know, one is a very serious, true-to-life story, and the other one is a farce. And so, like, I just can't put the two together, which is, again, it's fine to me that that's the case. Yeah. It actually works better that way. And that's what makes this so much fun in a lot of ways is that I feel that way. So
I guess my other thought on that would be, like, I can see the idea of Lower Decks sort of sitting outside of the prime timeline, outside of canon, like it's right outside the bubble in the sense that it is us looking in and it's an homage to everything that we've seen and that we love about Star Trek and all. On the other hand, it relies so heavily on canon. It's just a continuous stream of references to everything that we've watched before. I think for me, it's difficult to not see it as being in that same time continuum with all the other stuff.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing where I think I'm just taking it completely different from you in that sense. Like, yes, it's referencing all those things. But it's referencing all of those things because it's an homage to what we love.
Right.
It's not actually a part of what we love.
Sure. So that's what I mean. I can see it sitting kind of like right outside the bubble looking in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, it's not a big deal. But it just makes this episode, I think, to me, it makes this episode work even more because it is kind of hard to divorce your brain from the idea that you're going from an animated show that's all about comedy to this and whatever. But I got to ask you, though, because this is something especially I got a chance to watch the episode a couple of times. And one of the things that does bother me a lot, and it's another kind of actually canon thing. Mm-hmm. Why is Uhura looking through languages and she sees Bajoran or Cardassian? Those aren't people that they know yet.
Right.
In this time period at all. And so there's no way she should know or even have on a pad the languages of Bajoran and Cardassian. We don't know those aliens yet.
Right.
We've never met them and we won't meet them for a very long time.
Yeah, that caught my eye as well. And I assume it's because this planet that the Enterprise is delivering the Tritriticale grain to, Setlik 2, is located near the Federation-Cardassian border. And so maybe Uhura had been researching nearby systems and preparing for any unexpected encounters. Now, of course, we can say, well, we haven't met the Cardassians yet, so how is there a Federation-Cardassian border? I think this is one of those cases where it could be a couple things going on. It could be the case of what we have seen here and there in Strange New Worlds, where the writers seem to not be clear on where things have happened on the timeline. And so they make reference. I mean, the Gorn is obviously the elephant in the room where this is concerned, but there have been others. So it could be that. It could be, like we've been talking about, this is essentially a Lower Decks episode, and Lower Decks episodes are homages to Star Trek, and they're just built on referencing as many things as possible about Star Trek, which is, I think, the way that I choose to read it, is that we're seeing in live action something we would see in Lower Decks, where we're just throwing references to past Star Trek in, and that's maybe why, but the idea that this planet is apparently near Cardassian space, and so there's the Bajor, the Cardassia thing. And you could also look at it as it being seen from a writing perspective as a fun little Easter egg to foreshadow what's going to happen 100-something years later with the Federation and the Bajorans and the Cardassians. But yeah, in this time period, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I mean, honestly, it's probably just, and let's just be honest, it's probably just a mistake, you know, and it shouldn't be there because you can't do that, right?
Two more thoughts on it. I understand what you're saying, but I'm trying to think like the writer and not really, because I'm writing a Lower Decks episode, basically not really stopping to think, okay, cross-reference this and this and this. Does this really make sense and does it line up with everything? The Bajoran part might be trying to hook into the idea that there's this ancient aspect to it, because we know how ancient the Bajoran culture is. And in DS9, we have Sisko trying to unravel ancient Bajoran texts. And that's, again, where I take it more as a Lower Decks reference thing, trying to make it all fit together. I do love the fact that when she finally realizes that it's Nausicaan and it's ancient Nausicaan, and she spends all this time trying to unravel an ancient language, and in the end, all it says is, this is a time portal, which was a perfect Lower Decks outcome portrayed in live action with our live action characters.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're doing a lot of mental gymnastics to make this work.
Well, am, because I'm carrying over the title of our previous episode of Saddle Up.
And I think that that's probably the biggest issue here is it's a place where the writers make a mistake, and then we're basically having to do these type of things to try and make it work. And this is a place where I would completely argue, I think it makes it so much easier if we're in an alternate universe where they might, you know, have a semblance of an idea that Cardassians and Bajorans are here. They might not really have a lot of contact with them, but the idea that they've run across traitors or whatever that have, and so they have access to, you know, some of their language. I think all that makes much more sense than, you know, trying to cram this into, okay, how does this fit? You know, it's like, it doesn't fit, but I'm going to try and put this round peg in a square hole. And it, so, but again, it was just one of those places where it was like, I think it would have been easy to have not had this ever be a problem in the first place, you know, by just putting some obscure TOS alien languages there, you know, as Easter eggs, than languages to which, you know, shouldn't be there. And, and again, I've said this before, there's so many ways to not end up with these type of problems by just making sure you're doing your homework. And, you know, so again, it's not like a major thing that ruins the episode for me or whatever, but it is just another place where it's just like, come on, guys, do your homework.
Yeah. I think it's the Lower Decks explanation that I gave. The Setlik system, it's a reference to the episode The Wounded in The Next Generation. It was a battlefield in the Federation Cardassian War that actually took place on Setlik 3.
Which, again, I would argue is another problem. It's a major problem because you don't need to be doing that.
Like going to the same system. Like you could go to some other system, right?
Yeah, you're literally making crap up all the time, you know? So, you know, and it's interesting because the whole idea of them bringing grain to a place, we've obviously already seen in like Trials and Tribulations. And of course, the Trouble with Tribbles, right?
But that was an homage to the Trouble with Tribbles, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly.
That's the reason it was put in here in the first place.
So, you know, I think it would be so much easier to, I mean, if you want to wink at fans, do something like SETI Alpha something.
This is SETI Alpha 2. Exactly. That, right?
You know, so it's just, I think
just get it's, it, like, it's not quite right. Yeah. Right. Just off a little bit.
Yeah. So I just find, I just find it interesting
I think it's just them getting too caught up in the Lower Decks style episode and throwing in references to be throwing them in and
forgetting that
this was in a live action moment and fans are going to question that or they're going to notice it and then they're going to start thinking, oh, wait a minute, what year is it?
Yeah,
whereas in Lower Decks, you don't think about that kind of stuff. Yeah,
I think that the thing, you know, most interesting to me is that, I think you're right because this writer actually, one of the writers here, Catherine Lynn, has written, she's hired as a canon consultant on Lower Decks and a story editor on season two. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yes, they seem to kind of have an idea about a lot of stuff in canon, but not necessarily how it all fits together.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
And
yeah.
So, and I think they're used to being in a place where they can throw in all these references and they don't have to think about it. Whereas when you're writing this series specifically, you have to know specifically when these types of things happen. Anyway,
yeah. Well,
it's not a deal breaker for the episode.
Yeah. Oh no, not at all. And Catherine Lynn, as we discussed 2 weeks ago, is one of the co-writers of Charades, which is our discussion that stirred up a bit of more discussion in the Babel Conference afterwards.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did want to talk about the transitions back and forth between animation and live action because I really like the way that they portrayed the planet in animation and then in live action, both the view of the planet from space and on the surface. I thought that it was really beautifully done in both cases, and it was so well done to go from animation to live action that for me, it wasn't like a stark, oh, I just saw this planet in animation and now here it is in live action. It was almost like a blending. I thought it was really beautifully done.
No, I thought both of those things were really nice. I felt like they did a great job with the animation as well as, you know, having the live action and, like you said, just kind of mirroring what they're doing there. I think that all worked and was very fun. You know, it's interesting because this is pretty much a bottle episode because, you know, they really are keeping the budget tight here for the most part. You know, I think there's a lot of great TOS homages, of course, with the Orion ship and the way it looks. And so I thought that was very, very fun. And, you know, I think the beauty of this episode is really not to think about it too much.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to kind of sit back and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But I thought the fact that Boimler was able to connect with Pike and remind him that, you know, we don't know how much time we have, even though he's talking in code. They both know that Pike knows how much time he has. Mm-hmm. And so that you utilize every moment.
Boimler doesn't know that at first. He doesn't know that Pike knows.
Well, no, yeah. I'm saying, but by the time he's saying this, they both know that they Pike's got a certain amount of time left. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciated that moment because, you know, it kind of reminds me of the thematic elements of, Star Trek Generations about us not knowing how much time we have. Mm-hmm. And so making the most of every moment, you know, sharing it. And, you know, I think that is a wonderful reminder, a wonderful message, you know, and it was nice to have that little poignant moment there, as you know, and of course, then it's played for laughs at the end with them at Pike's birthday and everything, which really enjoyable. I thought was really fun. Of course, them being animated too was really great. And so, but in the end, it was just it. That is the part of the episode I thought that worked well. The best was Boimler finding the seriousness to actually be able to impact somebody that he really looked up to. And in the end, he kind of teaches Pike something, which I think is a pretty beautiful moment for an ultra silly episode. So I really appreciated that they allowed the episode to go there and to be able to kind of have that moment, because I thought it made the episode 100 times better just by allowing that to happen.
Yeah. No, it is great because it could have just been silly from start to finish, but they did balance those elements a bit. Maybe balance isn't the right word because it's silly more than not, but it's not just silly from start to finish, which is also true of many Lower Decks episodes. They're not always silly from start to finish. They actually do work meaningful messages into the stories.
Yeah, they absolutely do. Yeah.
And they actually do more character development on Lower Decks than some Star Trek series have done for their characters, even though it is a comedy.
No, I mean, I think you're right. You know, I think, you know, as we are where we stand for Lower Decks at the moment, I'm definitely ready for them to make some serious advancements in you know, character development for season four, because it's time. But no, absolutely. I mean, you know, they do a great job of, for the most part, being able to tell actual stories and all of that in a show you wouldn't expect that to. And so I think they've handled that very well. And, you know, I think what's interesting, too, about this episode is the way in which it makes references not only to things that the season has had in it because of the characters and all, you know, obviously we've got the Spock and Chapel thing and all that, but there's other little references in there that actually are going to play into the next episode, which I was really impressed by, that they did that, that they were able to kind of plant some little, you know, just quick mentions of things that are actually going to be quite important for the next episode. So, you know, as silly and lighthearted as this is, there were some things I felt like this episode was able to do quite well on that front to make it worthwhile, because we've talked about having it be worthwhile. And I think they were able to do that because they were able to insert those little moments.
Well, I'll be interested to see those because I've not seen the next episode yet, but that'll be interesting to see how they tie those together. And yeah, it is great that even in the midst of a crossover episode, a silly episode, they're able to work that stuff in. I guess one other thing I wanted to mention is just Jonathan Frakes' direction here. I noticed, for example, when Boimler first comes through the portal, the lighting is great for the background of the planet and the way that the camera pans up to number one when she calls to the ship and says, "We may have a problem." And then throughout the episode, I thought that this episode really benefited from Jonathan Frakes' experience with Star Trek and his skill as a director to elevate the material.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's kind of the beauty of Jonathan Frakes understanding how to direct Star Trek. And I think he did a great job with this one. And I think part of that was, you know, Frakes himself, I think, is just kind of known for his humor and, you know, being kind of a guy who enjoys humor. And so you can see here, he's very comfortable with directing humorous action and humorous scenes. And I think he did a great job of making all of the actors just comfortable to be able to find a way to fit together. Because, you know, one of the things that Katie Sackhoff, who plays Bo-Katan, and she started that character in animation where you're just doing voiceover. Right. Yeah. And then, of course, she's brought her to live action. And she said one of the hardest things about doing that was you kind of have to relearn the character all over again because it's so different, because how you voice them when you're in the voice booth is completely different, really, than when you're actually having to act with the rest of your body and do the voice. And so, you know, very difficult, I think, to be able to do that. And I think both of the actors here are able to pull that off in a way that feels like their characters from Lower Decks, but, you know, it it's like, okay, I accept that these people are in live action. Other than the fact that Boimler is ridiculously taller than everybody.
He is tall.
Which was fascinating.
Yeah. We were talking about that offline the other day, and I told you they should do a buddy show where it's Doug Jones, Jack Quaid, and Jonathan Frakes together because they're all so tall.
Yeah. You know it. I don't even know what you would call it. Truck giants or something. Or
And also with Jack Quaid, he got the running down. He got the walk when he walks in. And what I loved about the walk is that they didn't linger on it. They gave you just enough so you could go, oh, look, he's doing the walk he does in Lower Decks, but without making it an actual bit.
No, I mean, and I think that's kind of the thing you have to do when you do this, because, you know, in animation, everything can be exaggerated and it makes more sense. You know, here in live action, you can't do that, or otherwise it looks ridiculous. You know, they're two very different mediums. And so I think they walked the line there very well.
Yeah, same. All right. Well, any final thoughts on this one? And what's your rating for those old scientists?
You know, other than some of my kind of like frustrations that I mentioned just with the writing, and just I feel like, again, this is absolutely a place you don't need to be creating these issues for yourself. But this is an episode which I find fun. I just enjoy watching it. You know, I got a chance to watch it twice, and I enjoyed it both times. I think it's humorous. I think, you know, it fits, of course, very much the Lower Decks milieu when it comes to the way the humor is done, the way the characters come off, the way everything is happening, the action, all of that. So I really liked it. You know, I also, you know, you and I have talked about the idea of, like, with the Spock and Chapel relationship and setting the stage for the fact that, yes, this is going to end because we know, you know, whether this is canon or not. We know where Spock is basically going to end up. He's going to be very similar to the Spock that we know. And so this whole thing is not going to go the way that, you know, Christine says she doesn't necessarily want it to last, but I think she's fooling herself in that. So it's going to make for an interesting storyline there. But all in all, no, this is a super fun episode. And I like we said at the beginning, I can't really imagine it going much better than it did. I'm going to say this is a 4 out of 5 for me, 4 out of 5 Boims, because I think it could have been a 5 if we had just taken care of some of those, like, things that don't, you know, need to be frustrations. And so, but no, I mean, this is an episode that I will probably watch many times just because I can legitimately just sit down, turn it on, enjoy it, laugh along, smile, and go about the rest of my day.
Now, when you say smile, do you mean smile the way Spock smiles in this episode? I wish people could see you right now. So creepy. Oh, man.
That's why I have a face for podcasting, Chris.
All right. Well, my final thoughts are, I think the only thing I'll just mention that I didn't mention yet, but you hit on it right there, is that the other thing besides the Pike stuff we talked about that I thought was really nicely dropped into this episode was the Spock Chapel stuff and the Spock stuff, just Spock. First of all, I've been saying all along, and when I see people upset about how Spock's being handled and questioning what they're doing with Spock, I said, or you may be creating a character arc to make the character more interesting, and then you're going to bring him back to the Spock that we know he is in the future. And I think here they showed their hand a little bit that that is what they're doing, because there is all this talk in here about how the future needs the Vulcan Spock. The Vulcan Spock is very important. And the fact that they just kind of hit on that a little bit here in an episode where they're having Spock act the silliest that we've seen him yet, or the most emotional or unusual, was nice. And then the Spock Chapel thing, the way the scene in the turbo lift where Chapel realizes that, yeah, I never thought that I would be able to influence him forever, and I don't even want that. It was very emotional, but I think it also showed that they understand that these two characters can't really be together in the long term. And so they might be doing something with them right now, but it's part of a path to getting us to what we know from the past eventually. So those are two cases where I think they showed their hands a little bit in areas that some viewers have been questioning. Otherwise, yeah, it was just a fun episode. Like you said, I don't think this could have gone any better. All the reservations I had about the idea of the crossover were quickly gone as it played out. And I think it was a really nicely done episode that will kind of sit outside of the rest of Star Trek and just be one of those episodes that we remember for it being fun and different, like Trials and Tribulations when DS9 did its 30th anniversary tribute episode, where it's just kind of a fun time travel story. So I'm going to give this one 9 Orion Hurricanes.
Very nice.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Those Old Scientists. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's a closed group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So I hope that you will join. If you're already a member, you know how it works. You'll find a post on the timeline for this episode, and you can leave your comments there for Matthew and me and fellow listeners. I am looking forward to getting back into some conversation myself. I'm out of the hospital. I mentioned last episode that I was having eye surgery. It's done. I got back last night, and I can actually see what I'm doing. I can see Matthew. Woo-hoo! I saw his creepy smile a moment ago when he was imitating Spock.
You're welcome.
It made my morning, Matthew. It made my morning. So anyway, looking forward to your comments there. If you're not yet a member and you're joining, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field. It should come right up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. Please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. Again, it is grouped there just for our listeners. If you'd like to send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose Saddle Up. And Boimler will grab the message and Riker his way under the saddle. Bring it right over to us. And of course, you can find
us. Pony Express.
Riker. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to stop a toddler from knocking over the furniture, where can people find you?
Oh my gosh, it's an endless, endless task. But you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here in the network, you can also find me in the 602 Club talking about all of those fandoms outside of Star Trek we love. Hope you'll join us there. We've also got Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, you and I are doing The Orb about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Warp 5 about Star Trek Enterprise, and The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard. Over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me on two shows. One's called Owl Post, all about every chapter of the Harry Potter series, and Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills about Star Wars. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out some sort of new Orion cocktail concoction, where can people find you?
Yeah, I've become a connoisseur of Delac. I've got all kinds. I've got some aged to Delac. I've got some from some wonderful distilleries on the Orion homeworld and many moons. It's wonderful. I'm going to do a recipe book, a cocktail book for that. It'll be out soon. Watch for that. But yeah, when I'm not working on that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you, which you mentioned. You can also find me in the back catalog on lots of shows. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, and you can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active. You can also find me on all the new social platforms, including Blue Sky and Threads and all those. So hit me up wherever you are. I'd love to chat with you there. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and the whole network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support us, how to get involved, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. I'd like to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us right now. We would not be here without your help. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to saddling up again with you next time as we go from the humorous to the more serious.
Mr. Boimler, come stand right over here, please.